It is Friday, February 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump calls for strengthened background checks for guns in a speech to conservatives. He also announces the largest sanctions against North Korea. Ivanka Trump arrives in South Korea for the closing of the Winter Olympic Games. And the Australian government says migrant gang violence is out of control. We'll have a report. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump spoke at the Conservative Political Action Conference Friday. It's an annual event held outside Washington. It's attended by thousands of conservative politicians, strategists, and activists. Mr. Trump characterized his first year in office.
My administration, I think, has had the most successful first year in the history of the presidency. I really believe it.
Trump said Republicans must work to win the upcoming midterm elections.
They will repeal your tax cuts. They will put judges in that you wouldn't believe. They'll take away your Second Amendment, which we will never allow to happen. They'll take away your Second Amendment.
Trump, as the speech went on, decided to go off message.
By the way, you don't mind if I go off script a little bit because, you know, it's sort of boring.
Trump spoke of the grief of the families affected by the recent shootings at a high school in Parkland, Florida.
No family should ever save and ever have to go in and suffer the way these families have suffered. They've suffered beyond anything that I've ever witnessed.
And Trump called for strengthening of background checks.
We have to do something that works. And one of the big measures that we will do, and everybody in this room, I think, has to agree, and there's nobody that loves the Second Amendment more than I do, and there's nobody that respects the NRA. They're friends of mine. They backed us all. They're great people. They're patriots. But they're great people. But we really do have to strengthen up background checks.
I'm joined now by VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, I don't think I've ever seen a presidential speech quite like this.
Yeah, this is a very friendly crowd to the president. The CPAC organization is sort of a leading conservative group. For years, it has been a rallying point for a number of speakers around the country this time of year. And Donald Trump has been a frequent guest in the past as a speaker before he entered politics. This is a crowd that's very much behind the president and very much behind gun rights, which is why we heard a couple of references there to the Second Amendment, which they hold sacred as their constitutional right to bear arms.
Yeah. Now, during this, of course, this follows the terrible shootings in school shooting in Parkland, Florida. And Mr. Trump talked a lot about, he said increased background checks, also strengthened mental health checks.
Yeah, and he's also advocating that some teachers should be armed in schools. And this is getting some pushback from some groups that think it's a bad idea. The president talked about it at the White House the other day with some parents and survivors of the school shooting in Parkland, Florida. He seems to be trying to build support for the idea. At the same time, talking up expanded background checks, and perhaps raising the age by which people are able to buy, say, an assault weapon. At this point in the United States, it's the age of 18, and some people are advocating raising it to the age of 21. What's not clear yet is what exactly the president wants to do. He would be going against the National Rifle Association on some of these ideas. He seems to be trying to bring them along in one sense, and also offering this other idea of arming some teachers to counterbalance the idea. But I think we're going to have to wait and see what specifically they do propose.
Yeah, I think he was saying 20% of teachers.
Right. I mean, again, it's an idea that's been out there for a while. Actually, the NRA advocated it previously. And the question is, if he does run up against resistance from the National Rifle Association, from Second Amendment supporters, is he willing to use his political capital to try to bring those folks to his way of thinking? We saw something similar to this with the Dreamer issue, where he had a bunch of people into the White House for a long discussion in front of cameras. And a lot of things were raised, possibilities were given, but in the end, nothing has happened on that. So I think that's why we have to take a wait-and-see attitude. What exactly will this White House do about gun control, if anything? And, you know, this is something I'm writing about today. We've seen it with previous presidents. Clinton, Bush, Obama all had to face mass school shootings during their times. There was efforts to push certain things in the wake, but usually they fell short.
Yeah, and I believe Trump mentioned that during the speech, too. Also, he said, you know, he didn't talk a lot about this during the speech, but he said he announced he is tightening sanctions against North Korea.
Right. And, you know, as you played earlier in this speech, a lot of this was geared to getting people ready to get out and vote in the midterms. A lot is riding on that. The economy has done well. His tax cuts are gaining somewhat in popularity, but his poll ratings continue to be at or just under 40%, which is not a very strong standing for a sitting president.
All right. Thanks very much, Jim. That's national correspondent Jim Malone. It is time now for social media. Well, there has been a lot of focus on the opioid epidemic, both here in the United States and in other countries. Trending is hashtag opioid epidemic. Nick Walden Publin tweets, if hashtag Jeff Sessions, he's the U.S. Attorney General, wanted to help save lives and fight dangerous drugs, he would cease harassing those using marijuana legally in their state and go after the hashtag opioid epidemic, which is taking lives every day. But CPAC, this conservative political action conference, which is meeting just outside Washington, where President Trump just spoke, they have tweeted, over 60,000 mothers, fathers, sons, brothers, daughters, and sisters died in the last year from the hashtag opioid epidemic. At hashtag CPAC 2018, at mention, Eric Bolling will share his story of tragedy that moved him to make it a personal mission to defeat America's addiction crisis. Bolling is a former Fox News host. His young son, also named Eric, died last year because of opioid use. And that is a look at social media. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Five Congolese refugees have been killed in a Rwanda protest. The UN envoy calls for an immediate ceasefire in Syria. At least five people have been killed in a landslide on Java in Indonesia, and Myanmar and conservationists are collaborating to save wild elephants. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
An amateur astronomer strikes gold when, for the first time, images the initial burst of optical light produced by a supernova millions of light years from Earth. Victor Busso of Rosario, Argentina, is a locksmith by trade and a self-taught astronomer. On September 20th, 2016, Mr. Busso was trying out a new camera he had purchased for his 41-centimeter telescope. To test his camera, he took a sequence of photographs of NGC 613, a spiral galaxy located some 67 million light-years away in the constellation Sculptor. The sequence happened to include photos of the galaxy before and after the supernova's shock breakout. This is when a shockwave explodes from the star's core and quickly produces a bright light. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a report on alleged migrant violence in Australia. Well, North Korea has sent an 8-member delegation to the closing ceremonies of the Winter Olympics in South Korea and plans to meet with President Moon Jae-in. Heading the delegation will be Kim Yong-chol, head of the ruling party's United Front Department and a former chief of the Reconnaissance Bureau. Heading the U.S. delegation is President Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka, who dined with Mr. Moon Friday, but will not meet with the North Korean delegation. The announcements came after it was revealed that Vice President Mike Pence prepared to meet a North Korean delegation led by leader Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, on the sidelines of the opening ceremonies, but Pyongyang backed out 2 hours before. Go Myung-hyun is a research fellow at the Asan Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he was surprised by the announcement and the meeting with Mr. Moon.
North Korea has been doing quite a good job of spreading a positive image of the country and the regime using the Olympics and, for instance, sending Kim Jong-un's photogenic sister, Kim Yo-jong, to the opening ceremonies for the Olympics was a very good move on the part of North Korea. But I believe by sending Kim Yong-chol, who's being accused of being the mastermind behind the sinking of the Cheonan corvette, which killed dozens of South Korean sailors back in 2010, I think it's going to negate much of the gain that North Korea made in these Olympics.
Interesting that it comes after the announcement was made by both the U.S. and South Korea that the delayed military exercises would resume shortly after the Olympics, and still the North went on and made this announcement.
Yeah, so I think it's very much in response to the joint announcement that the joint military exercise that was already postponed once because of the Olympics will resume as scheduled. I think it's a message from North Korea saying that North Korea is going to match basically eye for an eye. So tension in the increasing tension in the Korean Peninsula due to the joint military exercise, according to North Korea, is going to be countered by the similar move on the part of North Korea. And I believe this is a bad move on the part of North Korea.
Kim and his delegation will meet South Korean President Moon Jae-in. What might they discuss?
This is a very disappointing move on the part of the South Korean government, too. We know that the Kim Yong-chol has been sanctioned by the South Korean government back in 2010 for being the mastermind again against the aggression against the South Korean military. The fact of the matter is this current Moon Jae-in government is denying the findings by his predecessor, Park Geun-hye government, and not just that, like other presidents before that. So in that sense, I think President Moon receiving Kim Yong-chol that the Olympics is going to send the wrong message to the domestic Korean audience as well as the wrong message to Washington.
That is Go Myung-hyun of the Asan Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul. Ivanka Trump is described as a winter sports enthusiast. A senior administration official said the purpose of her trip will be to cheer on American athletes, reaffirm the U.S.-South Korea alliance, and celebrate the successful games. The Russian state has constructed a multifaceted propaganda machine, and its attempt to influence the 2016 U.S. election through social media is just one example of the new type of threat the world faces. A team of analysts have forensically examined hundreds of thousands of bogus tweets and Facebook messages allegedly coordinated by Moscow. Henry Ridgewell reports on their work, which follows indictments against 13 Russian nationals and three companies accused of trying to interfere in U.S. politics.
The former site of the Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg, widely known as the Troll Factory, where teams of Russians used bogus social media postings and fraudulent advertisements to try to influence the 2016 U.S. election, according to investigators. The offices are empty, many of the fake accounts shut down. But their posts have been archived by the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab. Presenting their findings at the recent Munich Security Conference, Ben Nimmo's team demonstrated how the Kremlin tightly coordinates different arms of its well-oiled propaganda machine.
Overt propaganda accounts such as RT and Sputnik. You'll have diplomatic accounts such as the Russian embassy in South Africa or the Russian consulate general in Geneva. Then you have websites which claim to be independent, but which whistleblowers have proven or forensic researchers have proven are funded by the same entities. They're funded by the Russian government. Then beyond that, you have troll accounts. Beyond that, you have automated bots whose job is to amplify everything that goes on.
In 2016, Russian hackers stole emails from the Democratic National Committee, which were then published by the website WikiLeaks.
On the day of the leak, you can actually go through the online archives and see the Troll Factory accounts, which were boosting the DNC leaks. And they were saying, I bet the mainstream media will never cover this. Everybody has to go and click on the DNC leaks. And one account alone, Tennessee GOP, which was the most effective fake Twitter account that the Troll Factory ran, it had over 2,000 retweets of that story. At the same time, RT and Sputnik were reporting on this shocking story of DNC leaks. And you can really see the interlock between the different parts of the machine.
To counter the propaganda, Nimmo and his team aim to educate internet users on what it terms social resilience, for example, by reverse searching profile photos and checking past activity.
Before you retweet that account, or before you share that account, or before you like that account, maybe you should look at the profile, and you should look at it and think, okay, if it's a Twitter account, how many times does it post every day on average? If it was created 3 weeks ago and it's posted 150,000 tweets already, do you really think that's a human being? If it's not a human being, why are you engaging with it?
Russia has denied trying to influence American politics, but experts say this is just the opening salvo in a whole new field of espionage, and security services alongside wider society will have to learn how to counter the threat. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Politicians in Australia are being accused of racist mischief-making over reports of gangs of young African migrants and refugees running amok in Melbourne. The Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, said the situation was out of control, while community leaders accused him of making inflammatory and inaccurate statements for political gain. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Fights and violent robberies involving young African migrants have prompted a stern response from Australia's Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull.
We are very concerned at the growing gang violence in Victoria, in particular in Melbourne.
In the state of Victoria, the Acting Assistant Police Commissioner Shane Patton said he was worried about escalating rates of crime.
Over December, we've seen a number of separate incidents which have cumulatively given rise to this whole issue of African youth offending. We've had an assault of a police member then occur on Boxing Day in High Point. That was a horrendous assault, to be kicked in the face whilst arresting someone and then to have a group of African youths gather around them.
Jason Wood, a federal MP in Melbourne and a former police officer, says his constituency has been racked by gang violence.
In some suburbs, I know in Clyde and Clyde North, there's been aggravated burglaries in one in 20 homes, which is quite incredible when you think about it. I've had families where African gangs, and we believe it'll be the Sudanese, have come back two or three times and terrorised the one family. The first occasion, they kicked the door in at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Official statistics show that 1% of all offenders in Victoria last year were Sudanese-born. This migrant community makes up just 0.01% of the state's total population. And while the Sudanese are overrepresented in the crime figures, the number of offences is small. Zioni Walker and Fender from the African Australian Communities Leadership Forum believe some politicians and the tabloid press are exaggerating the problem of so-called gang violence by young migrants.
We should not be distracted by name-calling, political point scoring, or media sensationalism in trying to sell stories. We finally ask the media to demonstrate more responsible reporting on these difficult issues affecting our community and balance their reporting with the many positive stories that are happening within the African Australian community. A majority of African Australians have great stories to tell about their lives, about the positive contributions they make to Australia.
Stay on your toes. Learn. You're staying flat foot, so you have to stay on your toes.
At a gym in Sydney, a basketball club run by a former Sudanese refugee, Mayo Chagai, is helping young Africans stay on the right side of the law.
What happened in Melbourne is not something new, because when I first came to Sydney here in 2006, I straight away heard about horrible thing about us, about migrants being called parasites, sucking their social services, and being called lazy and being called criminals.
15-year-old Sudanese refugee Moniping Moniping says he and his friends are also wrongly accused of being troublemakers.
You see in the media, it says that, oh, Sudanese boys are doing bad stuff in Melbourne, robbing people, and then they think every Sudanese boy is the same around here. If you do something small, they make it look like, oh, something big. And then we go to the shopping centres and all that, they make it sound like, oh, we're going to steal and all that stuff, but we're not even going to steal, we're just going to buy stuff and leave, that's it.
The Sudanese aren't the only group of migrants to have found life tough in Australia. It can take generations to feel accepted. Just ask the Greeks, the Italians and the Vietnamese. They all endured hardships and discrimination when they first arrived, but are now well-established parts of a multicultural country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Countering Hezbollah is a top priority for the United States. It is a foreign terrorist organization designated as such by the U.S. Department of State in 1997. One of the best ways to hinder any terrorist group's activities is to attack its capacity to generate income. The U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, designated in early February 6 individuals and 7 entities pursuant to Executive Order 13224. All of them work for or are controlled by the network of Adam Tabaja and Al Inma Engineering and Contracting, which OFAC designated as specially designated global terrorists in 2015. The designation allows the United States to freeze their assets, lock them out of the U.S. financial network, thereby making international transactions extremely difficult, if not impossible, and prosecute them for terrorist activities. It also prohibits U.S. citizens from doing business with them. Ali Mohammed Kansu has a long-standing business relationship with Adam Tabaja and with numerous Hezbollah members and businesses. He owns the 7 entities which were designated along with him. They are Blue Lagoon Group Ltd., Canso Fishing Agency Limited, Star Trade Ghana Limited, Golden Fish SAL, Golden Fish Liberia Ltd., Dolphin Trading Company Limited, and Sky Trade Company. Jihad Mohammed Kansu is a financial manager of Al Inma and a business associate of Adam Tabaja. Issaim Ahmad Saad is a managing partner and minority shareholder at Al Inma. Nabil Mahumad Asaf is the manager of purchasing and a minority shareholder at Al Inma. Abdul Latif Saad is the manager of Al Inma's Baghdad, Iraq branch. He coordinates with Al Inma Group for tourism works subordinate companies, previously designated in June 2015 by OFAC. Mohammed Badr al-Din is a manager of Al-Inma's Basra Iraq branch and has worked with Nabil Mahmoud Asaf and Hezbollah money launderer Mohammed Nouruddin. Hezbollah is a terrorist organization responsible for the death of hundreds of Americans. It is also Iran's primary proxy used to undermine legitimate Arab governments across the Middle East. The administration is determined to expose and disrupt Hezbollah's networks, including those across the Middle East and West Africa, used to fund their illicit operations, said Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. The Treasury Department will continue to sever Hezbollah from the international financial system, and we will be relentless in identifying, exposing, and dismantling Hezbollah's financial support networks globally.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the